Welcome, everyone. Welcome. You are listening to Steele Talkin'. I am your host, Geralyn Steele. It is what I love to do is be here with you on a Sunday night. My goodness, we have a great lineup because of some really great producers. That's right. I have Jonathan Lowe as well as Chris Tubbs and every now and then my former one, Jimmy Erickson, whatever, every now and then just kind of, check in to see how we're doing. But boy, I have some really great ones. I just came from a big concert today over at the Crooners in Belvedere. And I have to tell you, the Belvedere tent is just so fabulous. Nice and warm, or if it's summertime, it's nice and cool. But they did the songs of Andre Crouch. Now, if you don't know who Andre Crouch is, he is a gospel artist who has left this world and has left a bevy of incredible music. He was quite prolific in his writing. And I was just so surprised, Jonathan, when I got there. And it was my brother Billy, as well as Tanya Hughes, and Kennedy Hurst was also in it, and Sarah Renner was in it, and the band was smoking, and the band actually had a very renowned artist who is a songwriter, and he was up there singing. He sang a song, and it was just remarkable. It was so much fun because the gospel music that Andre Crouch did, it was sacred at times. It was really fun at times. You could dance to it, and there were so many in the audience that just knew all these songs. I know my sister and I did, and it was spectacular. But you don't think of Crooners or the Dakota or any of the clubs as one that would accept gospel on a Sunday. So I just thought it was wonderful. And I wish you would go to something like that, Jonathan. I think you'd be shocked at how powerful and fabulous it really is, you know? So it was fun.
I actually wouldn't be surprised. I did not grow up. I think you have to go to church a certain amount, and be involved a certain amount to grow up in the church. So I would not say I grew up in the church, but I was around people like yourself that grew up in the church, that they went to church multiple times a week. They went to Bible studies as children, as teenagers, and they go to Bible studies now as adults. And so I may not have seen it many times myself in person, but I know of the power of gospel music, gospel choirs, gospel in the church and in a church setting or in any setting. You don't have gospel singers going to places like Radio City Music Hall and Hollywood Bowl and places like that. They'll have gospel acts out there. I mean, from time to time, I would think.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have it if you didn't have a power behind it.
That's so true, and it is powerful. And I'm always surprised that people who never go to church, they still come to these concerts. And we have quite a bit of those here in town. Some of the really famous artists that are doing gospel music, like they're like number one, number two, and number three in the country. And all of a sudden, they announce that they're coming to town, to the Twin Cities, and all of a sudden, it can be packed out. You know, because people are just blown away by it. So you don't have to be a Christian. You don't have to be anything like that to enjoy gospel music. It is really powerful. Now, a lot of the songs do talk about Jesus. And some of the young people that have walked away from church, sometimes you would think, oh, they don't listen to gospel music. They don't even want to hear about it. They don't even go to church at all. And that's not true. I mean, I know of some that actually love gospel music and will run to a concert to hear certain artists, you know, like BB and CC Winans. And somebody asked me tonight, they said, you know, you and Fred Steele, your brother, you guys should do a CC Winans and a BB and CC, which are brother and sister, by the way. You ought to do a show about all of their music, do a tribute show. And I said, you know, I think that's wonderful. And there's so many people that can do it. But for some reason, I am just not a tribute girl. It's just not my thing. I'm never excited to do it, but I do go to some, you know, and really hear. Today, the singers were amazing. The musicians were amazing. It was really something. And the sound, please know, everyone, some people think when they sing gospel music, our voices are so big that there's no way, you know, it's going to be too loud and I just can't go, you know. No, it's really not like this. This group today were able to use the technique right? The technique to drop their voices down when it needed to be very soft and pure and beautiful. And other times it was just smoking. There was this really difficult song. I think it's difficult. I had to sing the lead to it once. And it's called Give It All Back to Me. And it's like, give it all back to me. I give it all back to me. What he done for you, what he done through you, give it all back to me. I mean, you talking about taking off, Jonathan? The place was on their feet, man. It was just, it was amazing today. So just to hear it, to know it still exists in certain spaces, that was pretty awesome.
All I got to say is this. If you're someone out there that thinks that way and thinks gospel music is too loud and it doesn't have soft moments, it doesn't have quiet moments, it's too loud. I better not see your rear end at a Metallica concert or a Def Leppard concert or a rap show. I better not, because you're talking about loud. You're talking about all that stuff that's happening in those concert spaces.
Yeah.
No. Gospel ain't
got nothing. But I was at the Prince concerts. I'm just saying. I was at the Prince concerts. You talking about loud. I'm surprised I can still hear.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what. No. I never thought of gospel music and gospel singers as too loud. Really?
Oh,
really?
Then I have to,
you got
have to
heavy metal. You got metal guitars. You got drums. Mm-hmm. You got saxophones and brass and all. No. Get off me with that.
I got to introduce you. No. I tell you what, though. If Freddie Mercury was still alive, I'd be at the Queen concerts for real.
And that's
fine. Talking screaming at the top of my... But it's loud, right?
I am fine with loud stuff. I'm not saying I'm not fine with it. I'm just saying don't tell me, don't look me in the face and say, oh, gospel music is too loud. I could never go to a concert. No. No. I ain't hearing that. Because I know you're going to be third row at Target Field or U.S. Bank or Xcel Energy Center to go see, Imagine Dragons.
Oh, love them.
Yes, but you're going to be third row to see hear that music blasting you on the speakers in your face. You're going to do
that.
You
have no idea, honey. Let me tell you something. The Steels used to sing at the Fine Line. God bless the Fine Line, who is now owned by First Avenue.
Yes.
But Prince used to stop by all the time. And then he would come up on stage with us. It was so loud in that space, and that space is not large, right? It's comfortable enough.
Those are the ones you got to look out for. Are the smaller spaces, because you just don't have the air for the sound to peter out to roam. It's all compact. It's like what was that place called over here on Cedar?
Culture Center?
Triple Rock Social Club.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. When that place was open, it was a nice confined space, but again, it was confined, and you had these bands coming in. It was not a big area, and it didn't have a lot of soundproof. It was a lot of concrete floors and all that, where the sound just sort of bounces off. So those places get really, really loud. And my brother's a musician. My brother's actually played the Triple Rock.
How's he doing, by the way?
He's good. He's very good. He's been running around like always. Now getting back out of the pandemic, he's been traveling more and going to more places, and he's doing more things like art now and not as much music, but he still has his toe in the music world and still does some events. But he's played at Triple Rock, he's played at 7th Street Entry, smaller rooms.
Yeah, much smaller, yep.
And he was the one that told me, okay, whenever you go to any of these shows, no matter what show you go to, take earplugs.
I have them in my trunk.
I got a little thing on my nightstand at home with earplugs, and when I'm going out to a concert, I'm like, okay, good, go put them in your pocket and go with them. Or if you don't have them with you, buy them. A lot of places will sell them for like 50 cents or a buck. It really helps to try to save your hearing.
Save your hearing. And let me tell you, those of us that have been on the stages, I never liked the inner ear. What are they called? Inner ear monitors, right? Because you get to hear yourself. I'd rather have one of those boxes in the front on the floor so I could hear myself back in my own ears instead of plugging in some electronics that, I could hear. And I don't get to hear the whole band. I'm just hearing myself. That's no fun. that's no fun. So, yeah, that's what I prefer. I am amazed, though, at how big the gospel music can get. And if you don't know that, Jonathan, I'd love to introduce you to it. I mean, it gets wild and loud and incredible.
If you haven't been to a gospel concert,
I'm gonna tell you about it though. I'm gonna send you some dates and go, hey, this is when my brother Billy is performing at such and such and such and such and doing such and such, and it's all gospel.
I hope you'll show up. Gospel music is, in all essence, music, and it doesn't matter what type of concert you go to, whether it's rock or country or rap or R&B, or gospel, or new wave, new age, whatever you go to as far as the concerts that you frequent, what you have in those seats, in that audience, are technically, quote-unquote, believers. They're believers. They have faith that the music and the love of the music that they have. And so when you have that type of faith, when you have that type of believer mentality, you're going to see wild things. You're going to hear people singing. You're going to see people dancing. You're going to see people, you know, take off their shirts and ill-advised and dance around and all that sort of, and other things that might happen, especially when booze gets involved, folks.
Gospel concert. Yeah, that's funny.
But the thing that combines or connects all of those things together is there's a believer mentality in that I love this music. I love the music connects to me, whether it's through the lyrics, through the melody, through the harmony, whatever. It connects to people. And when you have something that connects to you, just like it does in religion, you're going to have people that are going to scream about it and fight for it.
Yeah, that's a good thing, though. We want them to be excited. Even those that have never heard the music, maybe a friend invited them to something they've never heard, like a garage band or something. You remember the years of the garage band? People were like, this is the stuff, right? It was usurping even Madonna's music.
Well, I mean,
so you just never know what music is going to touch your heart.
Right.
I remember listening to a few artists, and I couldn't believe it. I would listen to them and started buying their albums, and it was so soothing and so peaceful. There comes a time when you get my age, and you just really need a lot of that. So I'm really grateful for all the music that's out there. Would I go see one of those concerts where, what's his name, Manson?
Marilyn Manson.
Marilyn Manson. I'm never going to go see Marilyn Manson's concert, you know?
Yeah,
not doing the music that he's doing. It's not for me. It's not like I'm saying they're awful or anything. It's just not for me.
Just like Insane Clown Posse isn't for you.
No. No, that's when I get my I pull out my protest, you know, right out of my back, and I start walking around with the protest. No, that's just too much for me. Now, if it's for somebody else, it's for somebody else, but
yes,
it's not for me.
And that's what I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. I in most cases, it's not just a good thing. It's a great thing because it's another way for people to connect. The passion that we have for music, just as a species, just as human beings, I think in many ways it's inspiring.
It is inspiring, and it's real. All of those emotions that people feel when it comes to music, I don't care if you're at a funeral or a wedding party. I don't care where you are. It's the music that we turn to. All of a sudden, we will, you know, thank goodness for the iPhones and all the other phones so that we can hear the music we want to hear, right? We got to buy it, which is a good thing, and I'm hoping the artists get paid. But I do really enjoy watching people run and listening to music, watching people take it off and they unplug it so that they can hear it while they're sitting down and resting. I just think it's really cool. And it gives me a chance to hear some music I've never heard before. And I love classical. I've been working on some classical songs just because I want to sing them eventually. You know, and I'm not there yet. I'm not going to get up there and sound terrible, make a mistake.
I will say this before we break. The only place you probably will not find people singing along with the music is a classical music or a chamber music type concert. Could you imagine people trying to sing along and sing the notes at a classical music concert? Could you see them trying to sing over here at Orchestra Hall with the Minneapolis Orchestra? That would be something.
That's the Minnesota Orchestra, and they are Grammy Award winners, man. Awesome. All right, we got to take a break, and we're doing bring back some weather in just a moment. My goodness, is the hurricane still on your brain? Hurricane Ian left a path of destruction across parts of southwest Florida, but one area was spared from all of the devastation surrounding them. That's called Babcock Ranch, a community of residents less than 30 miles northeast of hard-hit Fort Myers, suffered minimal damage from the powerful storm. Now, a lot of that is contributed to how the community was built. From solar panel usage to power lines that run underground, Babcock Ranch was created to withstand the power of massive storms like Ian. Now, could this be the future of coastal communities? Well, Dr. Jennifer Langwell designed the community, and the president owner of Trinity Construction Solutions joins us now on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Hello, Jennifer. May I call you Jennifer?
Yes, ma'am. Good evening. How are you?
Good evening. I'm well. So happy you could join us tonight. My goodness, the devastation that we keep seeing on each of the coasts, right, has been really challenging for this country. And people are now asking the question, why do we have to keep rebuilding in these same sections if it's going to happen every year? What do you say?
It is a little piece of the American dream to have property and build. So I don't know that we can tell people they can't build on land they own, but we can help them make informed decisions about how they build and try and push them to be more resilient and fortified with their structures.
We've been talking about this for a long time, solar, right? And of course, we see some communities that are really adding it, but a lot of cities don't want to pay for it. And I know this is a big piece of this whole design that you all have come up with, correct?
Correct. And there's an entire design team that has been working on this specific land development that will turn into a town for close to 15 years. And we've gone through conference table of iterations of design to be able to put together a combination of things that we felt would give us the most durable and resilient community, which, of course, we didn't know or have tested proof until just recently. And
just
so it
recently.
Is refreshing, actually, to see that there was a little bit of proof of concept with what we just went through.
The community of Babcock Ranch, forgive me, this is a community you've been trying for a long time to make this happen, and it finally happened. Do you believe that other communities surrounding it will accept it and say, hey, we need to get that, and what is the cost of it?
So the vision was Sid Kitson's to start with, and he will tell you point blank, we want people to copy what we're doing. We are doing what we believe is the best and most durable things we can be doing, and he wants people to take what he's doing. And he's very open about everything that we are doing as designers, as engineers, as green building, and take that information and use it again. So do we feel that there's a cost premium? I can tell you to the homes specifically, there really is not any cost premium. If there is, it's minor, and you can usually recoup that in federal tax credit. From a solar array standpoint, we actually had a partnership with the local utility. And so although we donated the land, they provided the solar panels. So looking for partnerships like that are really what facilitate something of this scale to happen.
You must be so excited to know that this is working, that it, you know, did it just work this one time with Ian, or has it been working all along?
So Ian was really, truly the test. Irma was a few years ago, and mm-hmm. no one was living out here, and construction, moving earth, so to speak, had just started. And we had a lesson learned from Irma about how the power from the solar field was being fed into the community. And because we lost power in Irma, which was much less of a storm, we actually modified how the power was being transmitted and then sent throughout the community. So that all happened before people moved here. And we've already sat down earlier this week and talked about lessons learned from this storm and what are we going to do better? What do we need to prepare for? The what if? What if this had higher winds? What if we had more rain? Are we ready and prepared for that? Do we have redundant systems in place? And so although this worked, we're not going to stop improving what we're doing because we have still a significant quantity of this town to build out. We have 5,000 residents now, and at build out, we'll have 50,000. So we have a long way to go.
Right.
And, you know, and again, continual improvement is part of what we want to do.
Well, you started on such a great foot. I mean, the community is located 30 miles inland to avoid coastal storm surges, and power lines to homes are all run underground where they are shielded from high winds. Just knowing that alone, you have a head start. How did you know 30 miles would do it?
Well, and it wasn't necessarily a 30-mile knowledge, so to speak. We still have the same wind load, the wind zone, when you look at our codes, as the coastal areas do. This was the land that was available for purchase. It was the largest land purchase in the history of Florida. And 74,000 acres was put back into permanent conservation. So really the land drove the decision to look at the community and say, you know, what do we have? We have elevation. We have 30 feet of elevation. We have the ability that we are inland, that hopefully by the time a storm would hit us, it might be less significant from a wind standpoint. Now, that really didn't happen, but that all drove the concept of really focusing in on durability for this community and saying, you know what, we're not coastal. So what is it that we do have? And we have the ability to shelter in place. If we do this right, people don't have to evacuate during a storm event. And so we really focused in on durability. We focused in on resilience. We focused in on redundancy to make sure that if by chance one system failed, we had a backup system in place.
So people want it to be where they don't have to evacuate. I mean, I noticed a lot of people even stayed knowing that this was a four hurricane, and yet people stayed. I was so surprised at that, knowing how homes are usually built in Florida specifically. So I'm just curious to know how do you build something that allows you or doesn't need you to evacuate when a storm comes in? Tell me what mathematically or how you would come up with something like that. And does it exist on the Babcock Ranch? Is that what this is?
Part of our challenge is that there are many, many houses in Florida that are older. And in Florida, we had a major hurricane in the early 90s, Hurricane Andrew. And after Hurricane Andrew came, we had a significant change to building codes from a standpoint of wind loads and resistance to storms. So if you're a pre-Andrew house, which was, again, 1992, and there are about 4 million plus pre-Andrew houses that exist in the state of Florida, you are not built to the current codes. And the current codes are what we have built in Babcock 2. Now, we have added a layer on top of that, which is the Florida Green Building Coalition certification, which has a category specific to durability and disaster mitigation. So we have very much pushed our builders to build more durable structures. And we're actually now, as a result of this storm, going to start talking to them about a program called Fortified, and it's an insurance institute program. And it talks about making your roof more durable, making your whole structure more durable, and in doing so, gives you insurance discounts, which, as I think we all know, we're going to see probably a significant insurance rate increase here in the short future. So having programs out there or having guidelines that you can follow that allow you to go above and beyond what your minimum building code are really significant from a standpoint of durability.
So we can see now that this actually works, right? We know that what you have done, it works. Why aren't we hearing from the government, in the state government in Florida, saying, hey, let's get started right now. Let's start building these right now. Is it the cost?
So I would say there is a balance. And every time we do improve or make changes to the building code, we do price additional people out of the market. So there is a balance between maintaining affordability and an appropriate durability, so to speak. Now, do we need to possibly rethink those coastal areas or rethink those areas that are prone to flood? I think we've learned you can't fight Mother Nature. So right. If you're going to build in an area where Mother Nature can take its toll, you know, then I think there needs to be a different standard. But that's something that we are beginning those discussions on. And the rebuild effort, so the Department of Economic Opportunity is controlling the rebuild funds from Hurricane Irma as well as Hurricane Michael. And every one of those rebuilds are required to be certified by the Florida Green Building Coalition. So again, we know that they're more efficient, we know that they're healthy, and we know that they're more durable than a typical code house. So yes, our state government has committed to, now we're not at a point where we've done anything with this storm because we're still in disaster recovery mode, but they have done it with the last two storms. So I absolutely anticipate conversations around when we rebuild better and more resilient and more durable.
Wow. So you do say rebuild, but to rebuild according to what you have done.
Right? Correct. I believe okay. We bumped the standard. So I don't, again, believe that if someone owns that property, you're going to necessarily be able to convince them never to build on it again. You know, that may be the asset that they have in their family. So I think you just have to look at it from a standpoint of, you may not be able to stop them from rebuilding, but we can require them to do it in a very durable way.
Wow. It's just quite remarkable, and I'm excited about what you have brought to our show tonight, because this could go to every state, although every state is not the same. Every state has a totally different water. The way they build the homes on water, that sort of thing. I know Florida has a lot of, what is that called? The type of, it's not concrete, but it's underground, and you have a lot of those sinkholes. That's it. A lot of sinkholes in Florida. So each state has its own problems. Could this still be built on in every state?
So I can tell you in Florida, we really don't have a high concern about snow loads on our roofs. However,
yeah, right.
I'm feeling like you might. So absolutely, construction is regionally specific, right? I'm in a cooling-dominated climate. I have not used a heater in decades because we just don't need to. So it is absolutely climate-specific, but the structural components of it, and it talks about, for example, nail patterns or additional layers of underlayment. So it just talks, again, about redundancy. And I really, the fortified standards would apply nationwide. They would apply globally. So it's not something that is necessarily climate specific. They do tell you, hey, if you're in a hail zone, these are the things you do. If you're in a wind zone, these are the things you do. But, you know, for me to take how I would build a house here and put it in Minnesota just would absolutely be inappropriate. And vice versa, quite honestly.
Don't tell me that. Come on. That's what I get. Oh, man. Okay, Dr. Jennifer, I get it. I do hope that there will come a time when, you know, bright minds like yours can come together with other bright minds and be able to create homes on every part of this country, as well as the part of the world, whoever it is, that there will be homes built, because we know climate change is real and it's happening. We're watching it happen. And it's not easy to watch, by the way. So I'm really hopeful that these brilliant minds like yours will come together and find a way for every state to be able to have something like this. I am absolutely thrilled for you. Congratulations on making this happen and proving to everyone that it's possible.
Well, thank you so much.
What a pleasure. Thank you so much. And I look forward to interviewing you again in the future. Trust
me,
I'll call.
Have a great evening.
Thank you, Dr. Jennifer Langwell. Thank you. She is president and owner of Trifecta Construction Solutions, and she was joining us tonight. Isn't that hopeful when you hear that even in this small space, they were able to build homes and nothing happened to them because they knew how to build the home in order to deal with this type of weather in Florida. I hope that it spreads throughout the country, and throughout the state as well as our country. We'll be back in a moment. My goodness, how the time is flying. I hope you enjoyed this hour, and I do apologize for coming on late tonight. We had some technology problems here at home. I am at home doing the show, so I apologize for that. I missed you, and I couldn't wait to get back on. So, Jonathan, thanks for all of your help. And also, I want to say that we heard them talk about this amazing place called Babcock Ranch, and that we should be able to see other states in our union be able to have that. But like she said, Minnesota... No, not yet. We need those bright minds to come aboard and make sure they get it done. All right, everyone. It's been a pleasure having you on so far, listening to us. Really appreciate it. Coming up next is our 8 o'clock hour, and I told you earlier that we have some great guests for that as well. So stay tuned. Don't leave me. I will miss you. We'll be right back. My goodness, how the time is flying. I hope you enjoyed this hour, and I do apologize for coming on late tonight. We had some technology problems here at home. I am at home doing the show, so I apologize for that. I missed you, and I couldn't wait to get back on. So, Jonathan, thanks for all of your help. And also, I want to say that we heard them talk about this amazing place called Babcock Ranch, and that we should be able to see other states in our union be able to have that. But like she said, Minnesota... No, not yet. We need those bright minds to come aboard and make sure they get it done. All right, everyone. It's been a pleasure having you on so far, listening to us. Really appreciate it. Coming up next is our 8 o'clock hour, and I told you earlier that we have some great guests for that as well. So stay tuned. Don't leave me. I will miss you. We'll be right back.